everyone. This is Molly Douthat.
And David Douthat.
Welcome to More Than Hearing, a podcast to encourage preachers to use multiple intelligences in sermons and worship leadership, because there are plenty of ways to reach someone's soul.
Today, we're covering Nature Smart and Self Smart for the lectionary selections for the second Sunday in Ordinary Time or after Epiphany, Year C. The texts are all about weddings and gifts and wine and God's faithfulness. Sounds like a fantastic celebration, doesn't it? Well, put on your dancing shoes and raise a glass. We have illustrations and special effects to help you get in the groove.
This podcast is based on Dr. Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligences. Dr. Gardner suggests that there are multiple ways to learn, process, remember, and understand our world. Each week, centered on the weekly readings of the Revised Common Lectionary, we develop illustrations and special effects using various smarts based on Dr. Gardner's identified intelligences. Over the course of 4 weeks, we will cover word smart, eye smart, math smart, body smart, music smart, nature smart, people smart, and self smart. You could read more about Dr. Gardner's work by clicking at the link at the top of our webpage, morethanhearing.org.
Join us as we explore ways these intelligences can be utilized for a deeper appreciation of God's Word. Then we encourage you to try it yourself. Anytime and any way we can make use of the different smarts, we give people greater access to the Word of God so they can acquire it, process it, and internalize it in ways that make sense to them. Let's get started.
Well, here we are, back to it again. This is... Well, we kind of had a little bit of a disagreement with a variety of other people as to what this Sunday actually is. We were jumping in and calling it Ordinary Time, second Ordinary 2, and most other resources said, no, it's Epiphany 2. So we're going with Ordinary because we're just sort of stubborn that way. And this is also Epiphany 2. So we're also changing something else as well. We've got a much briefer description of the intelligences that we'll be looking at, and we've switched the order of the texts. So, everything is all upsy-daisy here. So, I will be doing self-smart today, and David will be doing nature-smart. So self-smart, David actually found a website by a woman named Diana Waring, and her very brief descriptions of the intelligence are this. This is for self-smart. People who are self-aware, they understand strengths. They are generally people who are pioneers, entrepreneurs, and risk takers because they're very aware of who they are. She also says, this person has the ability to enjoy being alone. So essentially an introvert, but maybe an introvert plus. They work independently and they rely on self-motivation. This person needs solitary time in order to think. And Gardner says that they are the most independent of the learners. So we will be looking at folks who exhibit these tendencies in what I'm doing with these texts today. So, David, you are looking at...
I'm looking at nature smart or naturalistic intelligence. And I believe this was the last one that, that Gardner added to the list. And again, Diana Waring, in her blog on relational education, summarizes Gardner's thinking about it this way. This is the ability to observe, investigate, experiment, and discover the natural world, including weather, animals, plants, and geologic structures. This person needs to go outside.
So they're a cat.
So, well, no, that cat needs to stand on the threshold and, go back and forth.
Right. But
classification is also one of the things that falls into natural intelligence.
That would be observing characteristics and being able to categorize them.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So it's probably the one that we struggle with most in including in worship. in a standard church service, I
right,
guess.
Because they're not outside.
Because they're not outside as a rule, yeah. But there are a lot of ways that we
that
bring
you can
it in.
Bring it through, inside.
Through the scriptures, of course, and hymns often, things like that. So there it is. That's our two smarts for today. And just because we're doing these two doesn't mean that you're limited to that. You are welcome to explore the other six on your own and come up with your own ideas. You can also check out our previous episode on these texts for today at morethanhearing.org/year-C-ordinary-2-2016.
We'll have a link.
We have a link. Yeah. Maybe I should just say that instead.
I don't know. It's kind of fun watching you do that. Okay. Are we ready to get on with this text then?
Let's get on with the text.
The gospel lesson for this particular Sunday. we've switched it around. We're doing the gospel lesson first and then going backwards. So the gospel lesson for this day is John chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. This is the story of the wedding at Cana. And you are very familiar with that one, I'm sure. For the self-smart intelligence, I'm going to be looking specifically at verses 11, when Jesus talks about Jesus revealing his glory, and verse 4, when Jesus responds to his mother and says, "My hour has not yet come." Looking at verse 11 about glory, I read an essay by, or some commentary by, Scott Hosey at the Center for Excellence in Preaching, who uses this as an illustration for Jesus' revelation and glory. He's been talking about how, you know, Hosey was talking about how we frequently understand glory as being something big and magnificent with lots of shining things and loud trumpet blasts and stuff. And he is saying that in this particular passage in verse 11, Jesus is not going that route. He's being much more subtle. Mm-hmm. And so Hosey illustrates that subtlety by talking about a friend of his who's a chef. This particular man does really wonderful meals and really sublime food, but he doesn't walk around the dining room expecting people to shake his hand or, you know, take selfies with him or anything like that. He just stands in the shadows by the kitchen door and watches people enjoy it. And so that's kind of the way Jesus has been is revealing himself in this passage. Is he knows what he can do. He knows what's up, but he's doing it in a way that's real subtle. Only a handful of people know what has happened. So for folks who are self-smart, they'll click on that idea that there's not a need for a grand revelation. It's just let's just do this and see what happens. And then in verse 4, as an illustration, Jesus is very aware of time in a kairos fashion, a fulfillment or an arrival. He says to his mother, "Dad, my time's not here yet." And she pretty much just steamrolls over the top of him. The time in this sense being sort of like an arrival, there's a timeline for things like puberty or menopause, or, you know, getting your degree and moving out of your parents' house. But different people reach it at different times. And so there's kind of a range of expectation of this thing happening. Mark Davis, in his commentary, is talking about that Mary uses the subjunctive mood to speak to the servants and say, "Do what he tells you." The subjunctive mood means that this is wide open. There's not something specific that's going to happen. So Mary has pushed Jesus to act, but doesn't know what he'll do. And Jesus goes along with it, but on his terms. So for a couple of special effects, the first one, encourage your congregation to think about a time when they revealed something about themselves to another person. How did that happen? And how did it go? Was it a large and grand revelation, or was it much more subtle? Mm. Or was it accidental?
What?
Sometimes our revelations are accidental. Mm. And then for a second special effect...
Is that like a wardrobe malfunction?
Well, I wasn't thinking of that, but it could be. Right. Yeah. That would be an interesting special effect. Wear a bodysuit. Yeah. So another special effect. When have you had to rearrange your timeline for something because others were on a different schedule? For example, did you ever have a teacher or a coach insist that you were ready for something when you were pretty sure you were not, or vice versa? Did you ever think you were ready and somebody else held you back? So for self-smart people, they'll really click on these ideas of time and appropriate time and self-revelation.
And the awareness of that flow.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And their own sense of readiness for something and maybe a little bit of aggravation that they're being pushed ahead of their own schedule.
Well, for Nature Smart, I was looking at the passage and got to thinking about the unexpected giving out of the wine and the unexpected abundance that followed, neither of which was apparently well planned for. Mm-mm. But thinking of it from a Nature Smart point of view, I got to thinking, what if the water gave out instead of the wine? And so I got to thinking about rivers running dry. Found an article from 2015 about the hydrology of the American Southwest.
Which is a similar climate.
Actually it is. And so they have pretty extreme swings in the water flow there. It can either just run down to a trickle, or even rivers might even run completely dry. Or if they get rain, you might get a flash flood. Mm-hmm. And then hours later, it'll be dry
gone.
Again.
Yeah, right.
So those kinds of extremes. And there are a number of rivers in the Southwest that are really being hard-pressed because of all the water being drawn off for agriculture and human use. So the idea of the water running dry. Then I found another article about other rivers around the world that are facing the same sort of problem. Then thinking more about the wine and the process of how wine gets to be what it is and what makes for good wine, I found an article at a website called The Decanter, which is a wine connoisseur, wine hobbyist website. And it talks about how the various environmental factors affect the qualities of a wine. The rainfall, the sun, the soil, all of those things go into adjusting the tannins, the acids, the flavor, the body, all these different things, right? Mm-hmm. And so you can take a look at that, and that will connect with Nature Smart people because you're talking about the environmental impact of what goes into the wine. And that came from, the idea for that came from a commentary from Working Preacher on this text, where the author was talking about a class at Princeton Seminary about reading the Bible with wine. And it was about these sorts of passages where wine plays a significant role and how to approach it as if you were a farmer.
Cool.
So we have links for both of those articles, and you can take a look at those. It is a lengthy process to make wine. And so I went looking and found a website for you on how to make wine at home. And there's a lot that goes into it, many, many, many processes and steps and things, and a lot of cleaning. That happens a lot. Anyway, Jesus just makes it all happen in
a couple minutes.
Yeah. So again, for Nature Smart folks, the step-by-step, the categorization, and the transformational processes. Then for special effect, if you have a meditation fountain, you know, one of those little Zen burbly things that you put on your desk, or a punch fountain or a champagne fountain, the kind that you have at a reception where you stick your cup under the
spout. Right. Yeah. Hope no one has sneezed.
Right. Set one of those up in your worship space and have it running just with water. And that will connect with the Nature Smart people because they'll that they will hear that natural sound. Mm-hmm. So that would be cool. And then if you want to get tricky, you could have a mix of like some red and blue food coloring. And at the appropriate point in your sermon, you just drop that in and all of a sudden it's made to look like wine anyway. It would still taste pretty watery.
Yeah, I wouldn't drink it.
No. You'd want to practice that to get the right color and, mm-hmm. and concentrations. But so there it is.
All right, let's go on.
The New Testament lesson for Ordinary 2 is 1 Corinthians 12, verses 1 through 11. Again, a very familiar passage on the spiritual gifts and all coming from the same Spirit there.
Yeah, if you don't know this
one. You don't know it. Come on. You're pretty new to this, so just read it. So let's just get right to it, shall we?
Yes.
So for Nature Smart, consider the various components of a complex ecosystem, like soil, water, air, various kinds of plants and trees, bacteria, worms, birds, small mammals, larger predators, all of those things. Each has a particular role to play in the overall health of the ecosystem. Hmm. Now,
and the presence of any one of those things will also determine what kind of an ecosystem it is,
right,
too.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And the numbers and mm-hmm. all that sort of stuff, right? So now this might actually work better with next week's text, which is the second half of this chapter.
Oh, okay.
But it came to me here, so you get it here.
And we're not doing Nature Smart next week, so
right.
There you go.
So there it is. You can make it work. And for special effect connected with that, if you can lay your hands on a terrarium... That you could transport, a small one that you could transport, you could bring that in and talk about the different living bits that are part of that and how they all fit together.
Ooh, cool.
And I've also got a link on how to make a small terrarium.
Cool.
So you can maybe play around with that. And then even though it's northern winter here, and boy is it,
going to do it again this week, too.
Many people are already starting to think about and plan for their gardens for the spring and summer.
Dang.
And so in a typical vegetable garden, you will have a variety of plants, but one soil. Different types of vegetables, but the same watering can. Many rows, but one fence surrounding them all.
I like it.
See what I did there.
I see what you did there.
So just a reimagining of the text in your gardening sort of sense. And so that should click for your Nature Smart folks.
Well, I'm looking at the same verse, verse 11. This is for Cell Smart. All these are activated by one and the same Spirit who allots to each one individually, just as the Spirit chooses. And for an illustration of that, think of it in terms of a suit of clothes that has been designed especially to fit you, your body, your fashion sense, your lifestyle, your budget, your sense of self. Present that as a way for people to think about the spiritual gifts. It's something that is for you. A way to illustrate that, bring in a favorite sweater or jacket or skirt or pair of pants and talk about why you like them so much and what makes them you. And encourage others to think about what items in their own closets might be a similar way of doing that. And for an extra bonus, when they wear them that week, have them think about what their spiritual gift is. Tuha!
Oh,
there you go.
Nice. If they know.
If they know, right. And so we're moving over here to special effect. If your congregation has done a spiritual gifts inventory in the past, encourage people to focus on their gift as they go about their coming week. Make it a point to consider how their gift can assist brothers and sisters in the faith to build up the body, how their gift can be used for others to glorify Jesus in the world, or how their gift can strengthen their own relationship with Jesus. You can find spiritual gifts inventory really everywhere, and then if you have not done this, have it available for use after the service or at home. We have a link to a site that has a test that you can take for personal use. So self-smart people, this would connect with them in a way for them to think about themselves and how that gift that the Spirit has given them fits them.
Okay, let's go on.
The psalm for today is Psalm 36. The lectionary committee recommends verses 5 through 10. We've included the verses on either side of it. We, of course, have them set off.
On the worksheet.
On the worksheet. Is, yeah. But the it's a psalm singing about God's steadfast love and faithfulness and righteousness and judgments and the salvation of God. How precious is God's love. All people may take refuge in the shadow of your wings. Feast on the abundance of your house. Give them drink from the river of your delights. It's just a psalm of praise and thanksgiving, verses 5 to 10. Verses 1 through 4 and 11 and 12 are some commentary about the wicked. Yes. And a commentary that I read about that said that rather than be squeamish about that, use those excised verses to make a contrast between what the wicked and the faithful can expect from God. Mm. If one is faithful, God's bounty is something to celebrate. If one is only for oneself, you miss out on it. So, try including the whole thing. So in reading commentary about it, I came across someone who was very taken with Marva Dawn and her idea of Sabbath and Sabbath keeping. Sabbath is not mentioned specifically in this psalm, but there's a sense of everything coming to a stop to see what God has done. And what better time do you come to a stop than in a Sabbath, where you quit your daily routine and the ordinariness of life, and you spend time in God's presence. So using this as an illustration about Sabbath, we have a link to a video where Marva Dawn talks about keeping the Sabbath. So recommend watching that. That might be something that you could use as your own personal meditation or offer to people to look at later, not during the sermon, for their personal meditation. Plus a couple of quotes from her book, Keeping the Sabbath, WHOLLY, holy.
Ah.
Haha. So she says these two things. First one, our society has forgotten how to celebrate. It has associated celebration with dissipation. It has turned the festival of the birth of Christ into a gluttonous spending spree and the festival of the resurrection into a spring egg roll and candy hunt. These occasions now nurture in children not a sense of the holy God, but a selfish desire to possess. Such acquisitiveness can never lead to true celebration, for the latter is inherently turned outward. We cannot celebrate ourselves. We can only celebrate others.
Hmm.
So there's some self-smart contemplation. And to kind of push that in a positive direction, one of the ways that Sabbath can, this is another quote, one of the ways that Sabbath contributes to wholeness is that it frees us to enjoy all the dimensions of our being. Here's self-smart people would be all over this one. As we enjoy art or music and appreciate beauty, as we experience the healing and rediscovery of our emotions, as we celebrate our true masculinity and femininity, these things bring greater balance to our lives. Moreover, in the integration that thorough ceasing, resting, embracing, and feasting produce, we know our real identity, and that leads to genuine humility and confidence of truth. That's a lot of meat for your self-smart people to sit with.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. So for a special effect, the images in verses 5 to 9 reveal God's abundant love is all that we need. And as each verse is read, allow time for people to travel to the mighty mountains or to the deep in their inner beings. Give them opportunity to sit and dwell in those places.
Well, that ties in pretty well, actually, with Nature Smart. That's a nice segue, because in verses 5 and 6, here about, I mean, this chunk in the middle is just very nature smart in its own. So the psalmist is talking about these very large experiences of nature, the heavens, the mountains, the deeps. So one reason that we like being out in nature, I think, is the sense of expanse that it offers. Mm-hmm. And while some talk about conquering mountains or waves or what have you, I think, this is just me, but I think it's generally the sense of one's smallness and vulnerability in the face of that natural scale that makes activities like mountaineering or surfing or sailing or whatever you're doing out there, a thrilling experience, because mm-hmm. it's tiny little you against the power.
Well, and it's also, you're a part of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, maybe against isn't even the right word, as a part of it. So this passage assures us that God's love and mercy are greater than those natural wonders that give us such a thrill. Mm-hmm. There's an illustration from Benjamin Eisel at Luther Seminary at Godpaw's devotions. And he reflects on the first time he went into a lake that he couldn't see the other side of it, mm-hmm. Lake Superior. Mm-hmm. So that experience of the broadness and the expanse mm-hmm. fits right in here. So you can take a look at that. We've got a link for you to that. And then thinking a little bit more about that, there are psychological benefits to being outdoors. It lowers stress mm-hmm. or the experience of stress. It may not change your situation, but it lowers your experience of stress and increases your satisfaction with life. As a rule. So we've got a couple of articles about that, one from Psychology Today and one from Science Direct. The Science Direct one is an actual scientific study. The Psychology Today is a column. And there was one other one. Oh, one from Business Insider, actually.
So, interesting.
All of these on the scientific benefits, scientifically studied benefits of being in the outdoors.
Cool.
So, which is just a validation for your nature smart people, but it does generally tie into the psalm while we're at it. Let's go on. The Old Testament lesson for Ordinary 2, Epiphany 2, is Isaiah 62, verses 1 through 5. This is a story of transformation and redemption, that for Zion's sake, for Jerusalem's sake, I will not keep silent until her vindication shines out like the dawn, her salvation like a burning torch. And you shall be given a crown of beauty in the hand of the Lord, and you shall no longer be called forsaken or desolate, but my delight is in her and married. And so the city will become the bride of God who's rejoicing over you. So a pretty cool passage.
A lot of hope.
A lot of hope. It's that third Isaiah. Mm-hmm. Section. So it's to the returned
exiles who are facing something that is not good.
Not pretty. And the promise that it's going to be gorgeous.
Yep. Right? Ooh, chills.
So thinking of it from Nature Smart, I got to thinking about redeeming, reimagining, reframing, which led me to reclassification. It's kind of nerdy, I know. But anyway, that's kind of where I ended up. So got to thinking about the reclassification of Pluto, for example.
Mickey Mouse's dog?
No, the other one.
Oh.
The dwarf planet.
Ah.
The one that used to be a classical planet, but now is not.
Right. Now it's just my very elderly mother fed us 9.
Yes, nothing.
Instead of pizzas.
Fed us nothing.
Fed us nine.
So anyway, of course, Pluto's fortunes have swung wildly here. While it was a classical planet, the more that they learned about it, the smaller it got,
yes,
and the less significant it became.
Yep.
And it
smaller than our moon.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So there was just kind of this weird hanger-on out at the edge.
It was a groupie.
Yeah.
And we get rid of this guy. Man. And
so it was kind of in disrepute,
yeah,
anyway,
yeah,
as planets go.
Right.
And so then it got demoted to dwarf planet, and, you know, big hubbub about that. But then in 2015, when New Horizons flew by, it became this whole different thing.
Yes.
And so mm-hmm. now, instead of being that tiny little hanger-on planet on the edge, it's now this beautiful world. And
it's been revealed.
It has been revealed as the greatest of the Kuiper Belt trans-Newtonian objects. So
yeah, it even has a heart on it.
It does. It does. So so that transformation of its fortunes, as it were, and you know, everybody was expecting that it was just going to be this dead rock.
Like our moon.
And then when New Horizons flew by, it turns out to be this wildly active, geologically active planet. Minor planet, with remarkable complexity and activity going on. So no one could have imagined how amazing and beautiful it is. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what's going on here for Jerusalem. No one would imagine that this desolate city could be the one in whom God's delight rests. Right? Oof. So,
wow.
So bring in pictures of Pluto, starting maybe with old artists' conceptions before we had any idea what it actually looked like, and then some of the pictures from the New Horizons flyby for comparison.
Cool.
Similarly, you could do the same sort of thing with the Brontosaurus.
Oh, yeah, because
it was misclassified.
Right. And you've got a lot of people in your congregation who could tell you all about it, I'm sure.
Right. Can tell you about the Brontosaurus. Thing is, Brontosaurus does not exist anymore. And not because it's extinct, but because the classification has been eliminated.
Right.
Because it actually was describing the same thing as the Apatosaurus.
Right.
And so it had been misclassified as something else. Yes. When it wasn't.
Yes. And the artist renditions of those have changed as well.
Because in part, they had never found a skull for it, and they just slapped one on. And it didn't actually fit. It was tiny. And now they found a whole one, and it's much bigger.
Right.
So it was reclassified according to its proper name. And so that we've got an article about taxonomic nomenclature in biology that goes into all of that, and it's not as boring as it sounds.
And
nature smart people will appreciate it. So, and the last thing would be that in 2016, giant pandas were upgraded from endangered to vulnerable after a census counted more than 1,800 animals in the wild, nearly double the estimated number from the 1980s. So, so that's good news for pandas.
Yes.
And could be used as an illustration. Jerusalem gets upgraded from desolate to delight.
Cool. All right. Well, I was caught by the first verse. For Zion's sake, I will not keep silent. And for Jerusalem's sake, I will not rest. The reason the prophet can't keep silent or rest is that God is redeeming Israel. God is bringing her out of the ashes of destruction, making her ready to be received as a dearly loved person, a bride, or a queen. And there is deep abiding hope in this passage. it's really kind of too bad that we're not doing Music Smart this week, because the hymn, How Can I Keep From Singing, is perfect for this, specifically for verse one. Yeah. I've got a link to Google, a Google search of that, and you can find a wide variety of people singing that hymn, including Enya. Another illustration I have, and a link to several different pictures and GIFs of children who are excited. Think of a time when you received fantastic news and couldn't wait to share it with somebody. You were just beyond excited. And I have a clip of a kid who's being handed an ice cream cone, and the child just is practically off the ground. That's so excited. Or recall a time when you're, another illustration, recall a time when your life was desolate. And now imagine God calling you by name, calling you beloved, helping you out of the rubble, cleaning you up, and then dressing you in warm, protective clothing and throwing a huge party because you'd been found. So that's some self-smart ways of illustrating this verse. Some special
little
effects.
Little body smart in there.
Yes. And some people smart, too, because you're also considering other folks are in the same situation. Yeah. So some special effects. Be really creative with this idea. Give everybody a crown.
Mm.
You can use a pin. You can use stickers, pipe cleaners that you've shaped into bee crowns, or let them make them into crowns. Paper crowns from a fast food restaurant. Tell them that this crown is God's intention for them as an individual to be part of the royal family of God. And then, for a little people smart, have everybody look around and see everyone else wearing all those crowns. Yeah. There you go. Or take some time, another special effect, take some time in the sermon or in the prayers to allow everyone to sit quietly, having been named, My Delight is in You. Wow. Verklempt.
Thanks be to God.
Yeah. That's it for today's podcast. Please ask questions or leave us a comment on our website, www.morethanhearing.org, or at facebook.com/morethanhearing, or tweet us at morethanhearing, or email us at connect@morethanhearing.org. If you tried any of these suggestions, or maybe got an idea that you like even better than ours, please let us know what you did and how it went. We would love to hear how using this theory has made a difference in your preaching and worship.
Remember to check out the show notes, worksheets, links, and resources at our website. They go hand in glove with the podcast and give you lots more material to work with. Don't forget to subscribe using the links on the website for iTunes, Google Play, Android, or good old RSS. Or point your podcatching software at morethanhearing.org/feed/podcast. Help others find us more easily by writing a review at the iTunes store. And of course, you can always share the show with your friends and colleagues. We'll be back with another episode next week. So in the meantime, stay subscribed.
And be smart.
The number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
This is a Whippet Good production.
That was probably pretty short, wasn't it?